thanks very, very much. Thanks to you, Jim Cote, for your service to our veterans as director of this excellent VA facility, and to the entire staff that works with you, the 1,000 people who give above and beyond what is required of them. And I thank them, because that's really what makes the VA work. It is really what is special. It's the people who meet you when you're coming in. It's the people who treat you. It's the people who follow up. And I thank you all for your service as well. I want to thank my friend, Mayor Driscoll. I've enjoyed working with the mayor over the last several years, and I really appreciated his comments, and I'm glad you're going to be once again having a veterans parade here in Syracuse. There are a lot of proud veterans, and I bet they'll turn out for that kind of an occasion. I also want to thank Dr. William Marks, the chief of staff here at the Syracuse VA. There are a few other elected officials that I want to recognize. State Senator David Valesky, who's here. Thank you, David. The assembly members, Joan Christensen, Bill Magnarelli, Al Sturpe. I also want to recognize Dave Houlihan, chairman of the mayor's VA board, John LaManna, the chairman of the Onondaga County Veterans Council, and Ron Fairbank, incoming president of Local Vietnam Vets of America, and all the veterans who are here, some of whom work with my office on a regular basis as we try to make sure that our veterans are not forgotten, and that whatever war you served in, whatever service you gave, whatever your experience was, that we're going to be there to take care of you. You know, my father was in the Navy during World War II. He was a chief petty officer. He served training young men to go off to combat, mostly in the Pacific. And he got his care during his life at the VA. And that instilled in me a great appreciation and respect for the VA. And over the last years, we've seen a tremendous outpouring of support for the VA. And we've seen a lot of improvements that gave the VA some of the tools that the VA needed to take care of our veterans. My father's no longer with me, but we have a lot of World War II vets who still are. And they come here because they can be cared for, and they know that they'll be understood. We have a lot of vets from the Korean War, sometimes referred to as a forgotten war, and they come here because they know they'll be taken care of and understood. And of course, we have our Vietnam vets, you know, people of my generation, these good-looking men who are sitting here in this audience, who served and sometimes believe that their service wasn't respected. And they can come to this VA and they know that they're going to be given not only the care they need, but the respect they deserve. And we have our vets from the Cold War, those who served in the vigil against communism that eventually resulted in the defeat of the Soviet Union. We have our vets from the first Gulf War, and we have now our vets from Iraq and Afghanistan and places around the world today. Every single one of them deserve the best our country can offer. And I know they receive it when they come to the Syracuse VA. I have no doubt about that. I've supported the VA here since I became your senator, and I'm proud to brag about the many services that are offered. The nurses, the doctors, the technicians, the medical professions that are represented here are the best that can be found. So I appreciate it, and I especially want to thank you for the opportunity to tour some of the inpatient facilities as well as one of the rehab units, and to meet with some of the veterans and wounded who are receiving care here. I want to tell you that during the conversation that I've had with them, they have nothing but positive experiences to recount. Once they get here, Jim, once they finally get into your care, they feel cared for. Unfortunately, too many of them felt they weren't cared for before they got to Syracuse. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. It is absolutely unforgivable that at this moment of profound challenge for our country, where we have young men and women in uniform serving often at great personal cost, not only what we know happens on the battlefield, but many of the Guard and Reserve members who've lost their jobs, lost their families, lost their homes, and have done the very best they could under extremely difficult circumstances. It really does matter how our country treats those who have served us. If you serve your country should always serve you. That's the bottom line. That is the promise we make to the men and women that wear the uniform of our country. All too often, what I'm hearing now is that we have broken that promise as a nation. You know, today I'm visiting here in the Syracuse VA, then I'll go to the Canandaigua VA, which we have fought to keep open. And we've kept it open, but we're going to keep fighting till we make sure it provides the services that veterans in that area deserve to have. Then I'll be going to Fort Drum to shine a light on some of the other issues that are facing the men and women who are deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. The 10th Mountain Division is the most deployed Army division in the country. And so these young men and women are going back and forth at a very high tempo. Now, I think we can all agree that our doctors and our nurses and our medical professionals are doing terrific work, but we are not giving them the resources they need. That's why I support mandatory VA funding. We should not... We should not have to be arguing every year about how much money goes to the VA. That should be taken off the table. That is a solemn obligation. I also have worked successfully to get health care to be available for our Guard and Reserve members. Because when we started having long deployments after 9/11, and a lot of our Guard was called up to go down to New York City, some of you might remember that, right? We were finding out that they didn't have any health care because a lot of them didn't have jobs which provided health care. Or they were self-employed and they didn't have health insurance. So I teamed up with one of my Republican colleagues from the position that we held on the Senate Armed Services Committee, and we were able to pass legislation making health care available to our Guard and Reserve, and we had to fight every inch of the way. The president threatened to veto it. It was bipartisan. You know, they didn't want to make Guard and Reserve members eligible for TRICARE. The Pentagon said, we don't want to pay for it. And our response was, yes, you do, because this is what we owe to those who you call to serve. And it is not fitting that we would call up to serve and then try to deploy men and women who did not have health care and therefore often had problems when they showed up for their pre-deployment physicals. So we were able to make progress on that. We also had a lot of complaints from our service members that they were being taken advantage of by some of the quick fix artists around places like Fort Drum that were offering them loans and all kinds of inducements to borrow money, and they didn't understand what they were getting themselves into. So while they're over serving their country, their car is being repossessed. Their mortgage is being foreclosed. You know, they didn't have any idea what they were signing. So we have worked hard to get rid of those predatory lenders and get them away from our service members and to give not only our service members but their family more help making the right decisions so they wouldn't end up in some of the situations they found themselves in. But I kept getting lots of complaints, and my office kept receiving all of these inquiries, because what we were hearing is that there was a big disconnect between the moment that somebody was injured and the moment they finally got to the VA. That in between, there were lots of people falling in the cracks. So last year, I introduced and passed legislation called Heroes at Home to focus on one of the problems that we kept hearing about, something called traumatic brain injury, TBI. It's kind of the brother of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And there are different kinds of problems, and they have to be looked at differently so that they can be treated effectively. So a lot of people with TBI were being diagnosed with PTSD, and that didn't fit the problem that they were coming home with. We had service members who were experiencing complex, diffuse, and life-altering symptoms of traumatic brain injury. One out of every 10 returning service members was affected by the best statistics we had, by traumatic brain injury. That included severe injuries as well as invisible wounds that you couldn't see but caused memory losses. People couldn't remember appointments. They couldn't hold down a job. They couldn't return to civilian life. Now, building on what I got passed last year, I've introduced Heroes at Home for 2007, as well as two other proposals to send a message. You will be treated as the heroes you are before deployment, during deployment, and after deployment. No exceptions. People will be given the respect and the care and treatment they deserve. No more excuses from our government. It's kind of sad that you have to do this in a way. I mean, I have to tell you, I mean, even though I'm very determined to get this passed and get the services we need, it shouldn't take a senator, it shouldn't take legislation, should it? We should just be doing this as a matter of course. I'm very grateful to have worked on the Heroes at Home initiative with the Wounded Warriors Project, the National Military Family Association, the Military Officers Association of America, and so many others who are seeing what I am seeing. Here's what I think we have to do. We should provide pre-deployment cognitive screening. That means you take a computer test. Everybody takes it so that you've got a baseline. Because here's what too many of our service members are being told. You know, they have an injury. They are in the face of an explosive experience with a convoy or out on patrol. They're not sure what's happened to them. And they go and they say, you know, this something's wrong. And they say, oh, you know, it's just, you know, usual problems. Don't worry about it. But if you had a pre-deployment baseline test, you couldn't say that. You'd have to compare where a soldier was now with where he was before he was deployed. Because I want accountability. You know, one of the first things I passed when I got to the Senate was based on my experience during the first Gulf War. We had healthy young men and women coming back from the desert. They didn't have combat injuries, but they had unexplained illnesses that nobody could ever quite diagnose. You know, they had skin rashes that never went away. They had migraines. They had gastrointestinal problems. You know, the VA knows this because they tried to figure out what the puzzle was here. So I said, well, give everybody a pre-deployment medical exam and a post-deployment medical exam because something's happening. I don't know what it is, but something is happening and we've got to get to the bottom of it. Well, I want to do the same thing when it comes to traumatic brain injury. We also need to do more to help the family members who are taking care of our returning service members. Sometimes it's a physical injury. Everybody can see what it is you're doing. Sometimes it's a brain injury or PTSD, but the family member is the frontline caregiver. When somebody leaves this hospital and they go home, it's a mother or a father or a brother or a sister or a wife or a husband or a child, they're the ones providing the care. And I want to help family members get the training they need to be part of this team that is so great here at the VA, to be certified as a caregiver. And I want them to get some compensation because many of them have given up their jobs, they've cut back to part-time to take care of their loved ones, and they deserve some help. So that's the second part of what I'd like to see happen. And finally, we have a lot of people, we see it in upstate New York. They go home to their small towns, their rural communities. I met a young soldier upstairs who lives in a small town here in central New York. And he doesn't have the treatment facilities there. You know, he doesn't have anybody who can treat him. So he does come to the VA. But I'd like to use more telemedicine, which is really being pioneered right here at Syracuse. We can use more telemedicine. You can use it for all kinds of ailments and illnesses and injuries. And the vet, him or herself, can use it, particularly when it comes to mental health. There's a lot of ways through telemedicine, through telephone counseling, that people who live in remote areas can get help and they don't have to wait. We have to get rid of the waiting lists and the backlogs for appointments, but in the meantime, let's use more computers and telephones and even televisions to help people get the care they need. I was at Walter Reed a few weeks ago, and I met with a big group of New Yorkers who were there. Boy, did I get an earful. because of the disability compensation system. I mean, it is outrageous. And all of Walter Reed, there were like three or four lawyers and one paralegal to take care of thousands of people who needed their disability assessment made. So I'm also introducing legislation to fix the disability benefit system. I want an up and down study of all the previously denied cases and the failed appeals. It just doesn't make sense to me that you've got such a high rate of denial. And so let's get to the bottom of that, and let's do a complete house cleaning. And let's bring in all of the JAG lawyers. We've got thousands of JAG lawyers in the services. Let's put them to work in getting the backlog fixed. You know, and let's find some volunteers. Let's get some folks out of retirement. Let's treat this like the emergency that I think it is, because people are not getting taken care of. I also want an independent review of traumatic injury claims under the Traumatic Service Members Group Life Insurance Program. Up to 45% of the claims have been denied, and the traumatic injuries are often the brain traumatic injuries, which are still not fully understood. So instead of doing a crash course and trying to figure out what's actually going on with this traumatic brain injury, we're just denying claims. And I want to be sure that we give everybody the proper help so that when they go before the physical evaluation board, they've got somebody on their side. And again, let's call people up, let's get them out of retirement, let's do whatever it takes to get the help there. When I was in Walter Reed, I met a young soldier who had lost his right arm and had lost a finger on his left because he'd had his wedding band when the explosive device went off near his convoy, and the wedding band melted into his finger and they had to take off his finger. And I said, well, how are you doing? He said, you know, I'm getting great care on the prosthetics. You know, I really feel like I'm making progress. He said, my biggest problem is, who's going to fix my brain? He said, I can't remember. He said, you know, I don't remember anything from that explosion, you know, for weeks afterwards. I can't tell you what happened to me. You know, my poor wife is trying to make sure I can remember everything about our life. So where do I go to get my brain fixed? Well, we got to have an answer for that. And that means we can't be denying these disability claims because we don't yet understand what the full extent of the disability is. Now, on Thursday, we're going to have a joint hearing of the Senate Armed Services Committee, on which I serve, and the Veterans Affairs Committee. We're going to bring in the VA, we're going to bring in the Department of Defense, and we're going to try to figure out how to fix this disability rating system. We're also going to zero in on a really serious problem. You know, back in the 90s, the VA adopted electronic medical records, and it has made a big difference. In fact, I'm sure a lot of you who work here know, but maybe some of you who come here for service or advocate for veterans may not. The VA healthcare system is now ranked as one of the best in the country because the system has been upgraded, and these electronic medical records, which I believe should be available everywhere, not just in the VA, everywhere, but the VA has pioneered it. And as a result, people's records don't get lost. People can be followed. They don't have redundant tests. You know, you don't go one day and they say, oh, we got to do that test. You say, I did it last week. They say, oh, well, we can't find the record. Well, that happens all the time in the rest of the healthcare system. But here's the problem. The Department of Defense adopted a different system, but they haven't even implemented it. So you've got DOD hospitals, you've got TRICARE, they don't have an electronic medical record system. And then somebody in the chain of command over at DOD made what I consider to be a totally indefensible decision to quit sending the records from DOD to VA. So here you get somebody coming into Syracuse VA who's been maybe treated in Afghanistan, treated in Iraq, maybe treated at Landstuhl, maybe treated in a military hospital, and the DOD is not going to give you the records? Well, we're going to get to the bottom of that on Thursday. We're going to get an answer, and we're going to get those records getting to you so you can take care of people. Finally, I've introduced the Protecting Military Family Financial Benefit Act of 2007. And the reason I did this is, again, because of the stories that I've heard as I've traveled around New York and a few other places that I've been lately, but mostly in New York. There are gaps in coverage for the death gratuity and the survivor benefits beneficiaries. And we've got to improve our pre-deployment counseling services, because here's what's been happening. We have a lot of single parents in the military, divorced, maybe never married, maybe have guardianship, and they're deployed. And the children are left with somebody, usually a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle. And if something happens, tragedy strikes, and that military service member who's that single parent dies, very often you've got minor dependent children and families excluded from the benefits and the entitlements that are necessary for them to be raised. Too many cases during the pre-deployment counseling, young people are not given the right information. And it's been very painful. My office has been involved in a few cases like this where you had a grandparent taking care of the kids, but somebody else was the beneficiary and there was no money to help raise the kids. So we're going to fix that. I'm also working on a new GI Bill of Rights. A lot of my colleagues are, Senator Jim Webb and others, we're trying to get a modern GI Bill of Rights, you know, so that we take care of education, we take care of housing. One of the young vets I met upstairs who was injured in Iraq, and from his story, certainly wasn't given the care he needed while he was in Iraq. Came home to find out he was divorced. Came home to find out that he didn't have a house. Had nowhere to live. So we've got to look at the full range of services that our returning veterans deserve to have. You know, for me, it's a great honor to come to this facility that does such a wonderful job. But it only strengthens my resolve to make sure that we can go to all of our facilities and say that the same is happening. All of you who are on the staff, your ears should have been burning, as I'm sure they are every day, as I listen to the stories that I heard from the vets that I talked to upstairs. So many of them said, I finally got here, and I finally was taken care of. Well, I want to fix the system before they get here, and I want to provide the funding, the support that you need to make sure you continue to do the job you can. Because you're facing a perfect storm. You know, we still have our World War II vets and everybody else. We have our Vietnam vets who are aging. And they're going to have more and more challenges health-wise. It's true, I know. I've been in the same category. And then, of course, we've got all these young people coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. And we have a very high injury rate because we're keeping people alive who would have died before. And that's the good news. But it isn't good news if we don't take care of them once we've kept them alive. And if we don't give them the chance to have as good and normal a life as possible. I want to end with this one story because it really made an impression on me. Some of you may know my colleague or know of my colleague, Senator Danny Inouye from Hawaii, Medal of Honor winner. I asked him, I said, Danny, how do you compare your treatment when you lost your arm and you were so badly injured in the invasion of Italy during World War II with what's happening today? He said, oh, I was treated much better. He said, you know, I was in the hospital for 21 months. Nobody was pushing me out the door. People gave me all the time I needed to recover and get used to the new reality that I faced. They taught me how I had to do everything without an arm. They didn't let me out until I could do everything myself to take care of myself and until I had confidence that I could go back into the civilian world. He said, you know, that's what I want for the young people today. If they're injured, I don't want them being shuffled around. I don't want them being housed in vermin-infested, moldy, you know, housing. I want them to be taken care of with love and respect. He said, I guess that's the final thing I'd say. I felt like I was loved. It wasn't just a job. I felt like I was loved. That's what we need to do again. That's what you do here. And that's what I pledge to you we're going to do for everybody. Thank you, and God bless you.